a bed and raise our children. And then we leave a flat for being a fat old mother hen. We tell her home is the only place she should be. Then we complain that she's too unworthy to be our friend.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Heidi Hartmann, who is the president of the Washington-based Institute for Women's Policy Research, a scientific research organization that she founded in 1987 to meet the needs for women-centered, policy-oriented research. Dr. Hartmann is also a research professor at the George Washington University. Her areas of expertise are women and the economy, workforce participation, employment, pay equity, retirement security, and she lectures widely on women, economics, and public policy, frequently testifying before the U.S. Congress. She is vice president of the National Council of Women's Organizations and co-editor of the Journal of Women, Politics, and Policy, and a co-author of Still a Man's Labor Market, The Long-Term Earning Gap, Unnecessary Losses, Costs to Americans for the Lack of Family and Medical Leave, and Equal Pay for Working Families and Survival at the Bottom. Welcome to Background Briefing, Heidi Hartmann.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
And clearly we have a lot of hyperbole in the press now following Hillary Rosen's remarks about Ann Romney not working a day in her life. That's created a firestorm. There's this general context of a so-called war on women. And in the case of the Hillary Rosen flap, it seemed to me that the issue really is, and of course she was, the rest of her quote wasn't included, but the real issue is not so much about working women versus stay-at-home mums. It's about what women get paid when they actually work, and most of them have to work.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, over the lifetime, you know, 95% of women work at some point, and usually for a good number of years. So the women that are in Ann Romney's position where they've been able to not work at all, there are very, very few. And I think Hillary Rosen's comment was really a comment about Ann Romney's class. It wasn't about gender at all. It was about class. And I think, you know, it got completely misinterpreted as, oh, she's against moms staying home to raise their children. You know, I think that was unfortunate, but perhaps predictable. And you're absolutely right. The wage gap is kind of stuck. It's been hovering around 3/4. 75% is what women make of what men earn for the last 10, 15 years. And there hasn't been much improvement. So, you know, I think many women are reasonably quite frustrated. They've done everything they can do. You know, they've gotten as much education. Many have gone to college more than men. They've been able to enter the occupations where a college degree or a professional degree matters, law, medicine. But they haven't been able to get as much into things like police, fire, construction, craft, trades. Those are jobs that pay well for people who don't necessarily have college education. And women have really not gotten their fair share of those jobs. So there's still an awful lot of sex typing in the labor market. And unfortunately, the jobs that women do disproportionately, let's say home health care aide, secretary, those just don't pay as well as similar jobs that men do that you know, have a similar level of skill or responsibility effort. The men's jobs pay more.
Well, at the risk of feeding the scandal machine and beating a dead story, Ann Romney did at a private fundraiser, which apparently an NBC producer overheard. She sort of somewhat showed that she was feigning aggrievement from Hillary Rosen's comments. She told the wealthy donors that Hillary Rosen's comments were my early birthday present for someone to be critical at me as a mother, and that was really a defining moment, and I loved it. So, not exactly an injured party.
Well, that's funny. I hadn't seen that yet. Well, I think, you know, the Republicans are looking for anything they can to get them off the hook as being so they won't be perceived as having a war on women. And this definitely helps them. I'm afraid it's one of those comments like, you know, Hillary Clinton's, I don't just stay home and bake cookies, that, you know, will live on for quite some time and, you know, have some potential impact. Hard to know how much on how anyone would vote, but it certainly gives the Republicans a chance to regroup. They were really suffering, I think, under the contraceptive issues that were raised by the president's health care plan. You know, the HHS issued rules saying, yes, if you're an employer, you're going to have to cover contraceptives for free. You're not going to be able to charge people a copay. You're going to have to cover it. First of all, you're going to have to cover it. And second of all, you're not going to be able to charge a copay. So that is what caused the firestorm in the first place and caused the label, you know, War on Women, to kind of stick. That label had been being used by NOW, National Organization for Women, for the last 2, 3, 4 years. And, you know, nobody was using it until all of a sudden it got attached to that.
Well, but it seems to me, and perhaps we're just in the political silly season, it's probably going to get worse. And also, I think as a culture, it's difficult to know the truth is a moving target. He who manages and manipulates and spins the truth that wins the argument. People choose their own truth in many ways. Data doesn't matter, I think, particularly when it comes to conservatives. But you just mentioned a little while ago, Heidi Hartman, that 90% of women work. They have to work.
95% over the lifetime, and in any 1 year, about 60% of all women, this is everybody 16 and up. A lot of those young people are in college, and of course the older people are retired, so yeah.
So what are we? Why are we talking about this 5% atavistic vision of Ozzie and Harriet's world from black and white television in the 50s?
Well, it's always appealing to go back. I think that's been one of the themes of the feminist criticism of the Republican agenda. They wanted, especially on contraception, they wanted to take us back not just to the 1950s, but, you know, the Middle Ages. I mean, you know, the rhetoric's been flying around. So I think nostalgia is always appealing. Though, you know, let's bear in mind that a great many women, perhaps about half, take some time off during the child-rearing years. I think something like half of women take at least a year off, and something like a quarter of women take several years off during the period when their children are young. But the majority experience, the overwhelmingly majority experience for mothers in this country is working. Their children are, you know, going to grow to adulthood, and they've only taken a few years off at most. So I think the Democrats can recover, you know, their turf by emphasizing how much they do for working women, how much they are the party of working women, how they're trying to get working women equal wages. I think the Republicans really have very little to say about that.
Well, Republican governor who's somewhat in the midst of a firestorm, he's being recalled, Scott Walker, in the midst of this heated political environment, in a somewhat stealthy way, he reversed a Wisconsin law allowing equal pay. And, I mean, that in itself is a pretty extraordinary thing, isn't it? I mean, that is really literally and figuratively turning back the clock.
Definitely. We've had a federal Equal Pay Act since 1963, and really people became aware of an equal pay like about the beginning of the 20th century. There were articles written about it in the economics journals in England and the United States, and it really became a movement during World War II when so many women had to take over men's jobs, and it was legal to pay them less for the jobs the men had been doing. And so that required got going a lot of agitation in this country and others, and by 1963, they finally succeeded in getting a bill passed. Yeah, so anyone who wants to turn the clock back is, I mean, when it comes to appealing to voters, I think they're out of their mind trying to do stuff like that.
Well, I suppose we'll see what happens with this recall, but I imagine it's motivated a lot of women to vote against Governor Walker in the recall petition.
Yes, I think so. And I do recall also during the occupation of the state capitol building, there were a lot of women, very prominent nurses and other union employees especially, but, you know, very, very supportive of that effort to keep the collective bargaining rights in that state. So I think women are, in general, more favorable towards helping each other out. They're usually in favor of assisting the poor, providing federal subsidies for child care, for job training, for education. They're very much community-oriented, and that is you know, much more a Democratic agenda. And so that it kind of tends to explain why more registered Democrats are female than among registered Republicans. More Democratic voters in primaries are female. And right now, of course, the polls are showing a big gender gap in President Obama's favor.
against Mitt Romney.
Yes.
Whose wife, Anne, thought she had a winning argument there for a while. But, of course, she succeeded in reversing herself in private. But let me again remind the audience I'm speaking with Heidi Hartmann, who's the president of the Washington-based Institute for Women's Policy Research, a scientific research organization that she founded in 1987 to meet the needs for women-centered, policy-oriented research. And she's also a research professor at the George Washington University. I have a daughter in medical school, and most of her class are women, and I believe that's also true with entrance in law schools in this country. So how are they doing in terms of equal pay? Is that, and contrast that with the rest of the working community?
Well, first of all, congratulations. And when you have children that, you know, get advanced degrees, that's good because they're much more likely to earn, you know, living wages, more than living wages, and not experience unemployment and so forth. So it's a good path for people to get on a secure future. In general, women have done a much better job in getting into those kinds of professions where they can get credentials from universities. And they are usually, and getting into that profession raises women's salary, but it doesn't necessarily raise it up to what the men are getting in that profession. It may be that they choose different specialties and the men choose higher earning specialties. It may be that the men get the partnerships at the bigger law firms. But medicine is actually doing a little bit better than law, and part of the reason for that seems to be that it's more able to adjust hours for child rearing and childbirth. So there are quite a few doctors who work part-time during the childbearing years, and they're able to do that. A lot of them are on salary. The women seem to prefer to be in the salaried situation rather than their own practices. We know whether that's discrimination in getting credit or whatever, who knows. So it's not necessarily all choice. It can be barriers that they perceive. But women do earn less in professions than men in general, but by entering a profession, women earn so much more than if they don't go to college or don't get that advanced degree. So it's a big advantage to women to get those degrees. One of the worst industries for women is finance, securities, investments, huge gender gap there. Some of the best are where we are in the public sector and have collective bargaining, so teaching. Police has virtually equal wages now between women and men, and sheriffs as well, as does public school teaching. So, you know, there are areas where you can get equal pay, but of course, elementary school teachers not as high paid as a doctor or a lawyer. So many women are going to go in to law and medicine who have the skills. They won't necessarily get equal pay, but they will get very high pay for women, you know, because women's pay on average is so much lower.
So what's the reason for that? Is that a convenient disparity for employers in the sense that, you know, I think employers probably, if they have a choice between paying more and paying less, they'd prefer to pay less? Or is this a holdover of, you know, the kind of Jurassic patriarchy?
Well, it could be both, right? I mean, that is, it could be the holdover from patriarchy, and it could be of interest to employers because they can pay less. I think a typical example is, you know, if only men could become secretaries, there, for some reason there were no female secretaries, and we still have secretaries, believe it or not, although they seem to be disappearing from most of our lives, it's still one of the largest occupations for women in the United States. What would they have to pay men to find enough men with enough skills to be secretaries, you know? Language skills, grammatical skills, typing skills, etc., filing, organizational skills, and probably they'd have to pay them more than what they're paying secretaries now, because men with those skills, you know, have more higher-paying options that they can go into than women with those skills have. So that's the comparable worth problem that, because secretary is a female job, they can get away with paying less for it. Well, that is, I believe, profitable to business. It's like they're getting a free ride on women, on women's backs. So I do think that there is a reason to keep women's wages low, just as there's a reason to keep the wages of African Americans or Hispanics low. You can exploit people because they don't have other options. A lot of the jobs aren't unionized, so they don't have that protection. So, it's definitely profitable for businesses to pay people less than they're worth. And I'm sure they're making money on it. That doesn't mean that you can't change it. You know, you can change it through law, enforcement of law, political organization, collective bargaining. We've made changes. Wage gap used to be 60 cents on the dollar for women. Now it's all the way up to 77 cents on the dollar. So we have made progress, but, you know, we still have a bit more way to go there.
Well, how is it translating politically, though? We started out, Heidi Hartman, talking about the so-called war on women, which Fox News is in a lather about, saying it's all phony, which I suspect means that it's bothering Republican strategists. But it is fairly real, at least if you followed the primaries. There's some extraordinary things were said, particularly by Rick Santorum.
Rick Santorum has been saying that single mothers are the dragging down our economy and, you know, all kinds of stuff that we haven't heard in quite some time.
So where do you think it stands as a political issue? Is it going to be visiting us throughout this? I mean, they say that Romney has a women problem. I mean, the president, on the other hand, he one of the first things he did was a Lilly Ledbetter Act. I mentioned that Governor Scott Walker overturned an equal pay law in Wisconsin. Just give us a sense of where this stands as an election year political issue.
Well, I think it'll be pretty high on the agenda. You know, right around the time of the election, both parties suddenly realize, oops, women vote. We better look like we're doing something for women. So there's always that tendency in any election year. But obviously, this year, it's elevated even more. And I think there were two reasons for that. One was the contraceptive debate about the health care and the fact that the Republican candidates, you know, were happy to say they want to get rid of that. They don't want that. And that does definitely rile women. They are very upset about that. By the way, it upsets many men, too. Men are interested in birth control. Men are supportive of abortion, for example, sometimes even more than women in surveys. So, you know, these are not just women's issues. And even equal pay is supported as almost as much by men as about women. I remember in one focus group, it was reported to me that a man said, you know, my wife is just as tired as I am at the end of the day. Why doesn't she make the same money I do? And so this equal pay is very much a family issue for men and women as well. So, you know, what's billed as women's issues is really of interest to men as well. But I, you know, as a think tank, as running ahead of a think tank on women, I certainly hope it remains a focus the whole election season long. It will be, I think, the first time in a long time that women's issues really would be a focus of a campaign. From that point of view, it might be very interesting to see what the platform committees do at the annual conventions. Are they going to be trying to strengthen their party platforms on women's issues? For example, the Equal Rights Amendment, passage of that, I believe the Democrats took it out a few years ago. It hasn't been in the Republican Party platform for quite some time. So there are quite a few issues where, you know, both parties could improve how they're what they're doing for women, what they're presenting they want to do for women, and appealing to women voters, speaking more to women's organizations out on the campaign trail. They, you know, both of them have substantial areas for improvement.
Well, do you think that given that the Democrats are sort of the mommy party, a majority of 60% of women vote for Democrat, and conversely, the Republicans are the daddy party, 60% of American men vote for Republican, is there any way, we mentioned Romney's a deficit with women and how he might address that, but how do you think the Democrats could find a way to appeal to Republican men on the issue of women? You mentioned earlier these men must recognize that their wives are working too and that they're just exhausted at the end of the day, and maybe they need a pay raise to have a level playing field with men.
Yeah, I mean, I think that certainly appeals to some men. I think what the parties usually do is talk about things they perceive as of potentially greater interest to men. Energy policy, military policy. You know, it's all on the margins. You don't necessarily have to convince Republicans or Democrats to do anything different. You have to go after those independent voters, or a group that didn't go for Obama was older voters. He could get more votes there. The Republicans could strengthen their stronghold in older voters. They have a lot of options to choose among where they want to try to appeal to swing over some voters. I think since there hasn't been an attack on the American homeland, the security voters that George Bush might have gotten might be less inclined to go Republican. And also, of course, Obama has a pretty good record there with finally assassinating Osama bin Laden. So, it's interesting to me to see how the Democrats will appeal to men more. I think jobs is on everybody's mind, and job creation is very important for men and women. I mean, in the recent months, we've seen some good job growth for both, but before that, we saw women losing a lot of jobs in state and local government. How to get those jobs back? Well, transfer some money from the federal government to the state and local governments. Obama and the Democrats wanted to do that. The Republicans didn't. So the Republicans are weak, I think, on job creation for women, for sure. And job creation for everybody is just difficult. If an economist friend of mine likes to say, if politicians knew how to create good jobs, they'd do it all the time. They would never stop doing it. But we do know that economic stimulus does work, and that spending more federal money does create more jobs. So those are some options, but those options don't seem to be going through Congress. But it's certainly something Democrats can campaign on. If I were them, I would be campaigning very strongly on Social Security and Medicare. I would be saying I will not cut Social Security, and we have to control health care costs, and Medicare will benefit from that general control of health care costs, but not to be looking to cut Medicare, cut Medicaid, or cut Social Security. You could get a lot of older voters back on the Democratic side if the Democrats emphasize that they would not cut, read my lips, I will not cut Social Security benefits. Unfortunately, we haven't heard that kind of promise from President Obama.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Heidi Hartman.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Heidi Hartman, who is the president of the Washington-based Institute for Women's Policy Research, a scientific research organization that she founded in 1987 to meet the need for women-centered, policy-oriented research. Dr. Hartman is also a research professor at the George Washington University, and she is the vice chair of the National Council of Women's Organization and co-editor of the Journal of Women, Politics, and Policy, and the author of Equal Pay for Working Families and Survival at the Bottom. And we're going to take a brief station break, and we'll get answers to the mystery still surrounding the 60-minute story that killed Dan Rather's career and helped re-elect George W. Bush.